This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stacio. Alan Thompson grew up in Chapel Hill, but not the place you know today. Alan came of age in the 1960s when the little college town was forced to confront its racism and dismantle segregation. A slow trickle of African-American students were making their way into formerly all-white schools. Race relations were tense. Alan Thompson wanted to write a memoir about his time growing up in Chapel Hill, but that eventually morphed into his debut novel, A Hollow Cup. It imagines a murder that takes place in a town that looks a lot like Chapel Hill in the 60s. And Alan Thompson is with me today. Welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you. I'm glad to be here.
So here's a novel that takes place in two time periods. It's contemporary. It's set in the contemporary time, then flashes back to the 60s when a murder took place of a young African-American girl. Tell us a little more about the plot.
Well, that is the central issue of the plot. A young woman is killed on the same evening that there is a demonstration on the college campus with respect to the rights of the food service workers. She goes missing, and she's discovered a few days later. A man is arrested. He's eventually released, creating a good bit of turmoil in town. And 25 years later, what I think of as the two protagonists of the novel return to the little town of New Hope in an effort to find her killer.
And the man originally arrested and released was a white man.
That's correct.
The two who go back, describe them for us.
Well, the white protagonist is a man, a boy, early in the middle of the book, and a man at the end of the book, a white boy. His name is Pete Johnson. He is seemingly successful as a student. He goes off to law school, returns 25 years later, somewhat disillusioned with the practice of law, but he decides to come back and help defend the man who has finally been charged with the murder of the black woman, and who happens to be the same guy that was charged originally. The other protagonist is a man named Luke Stanley. We see him as a boy and later as a man. Luke is a pioneer in New Hope. He was the first black student to attend Chapel Hill's, or rather New Hope's, all-white schools. He and Pete had formed a relationship, not quite a friendship, but more than was usual in those times, and they renew that relationship 25 years later.
But he comes back helping the prosecution.
Absolutely. The woman that the young woman that was killed was the love of his life, and he comes back very intent on prosecuting the individual who's been charged and making sure that he's executed.
And of course, he can't really come back as a prosecutor. They've already hired that person.
But they have a prosecutor. Yeah. He is, in fact, a law school professor by this point in time, and he has returned to simply help with witness interviews and the sort of things that lawyers have to do to get ready for a criminal trial.
Will you read for us?
Oh, sure. I'm just going to read a piece that should take about a minute. It is a dialogue, conversation between the two men we were just talking about. Actually, they're boys here. Luke Stanley and his family, as I say, have sent him to the white schools, as opposed to the school he would have attended, the black high school, Washington High School. It was not a particularly good experience for Luke, and he and his family at this point in the book, which is, from a chronological point of view, early 1960s, say 1963, he and his family have decided to change course. Pete, can I talk to you? Sure, Luke, sit down. Not here. Let's go outside. Pete rose from the table and they walked out of the cafeteria, past the entrance to the gym and around to the steps of the auditorium. Luke sat down on the top step. Pete chose the broad slab that capped the orange wall binding the steps. It was bright and hot and there was no breeze. They could hear the sputter of a lawnmower around the corner of the building and the smell of gasoline and new-cut grass mingled in the air. Luke looked across the lawn to High Street. "Pete, I won't be here next year." He smiled. "You and the team," they played basketball together, "you and the team will have to carry on without me." "Why? Where are you going?" "I'm moving to Washington." "But why?" "I came to school here because my father wanted me to, and I guess I'm going to Washington for the same reason." "Well, why don't you tell your dad you want to stay here?" He considered his response to the only boy who might have been his friend. "I didn't say I wanted to stay here, Pete. I don't. I'm willing to stay if that's what Dad wants, but since he's changed his mind, I'm happy to leave." "Why?" He hesitated. "Pete, I'm tired of being alone. I'm tired of being looked down on. I'm tired of wondering what people are really thinking. I'm just tired." Pete looked at him for a minute, blinking. "I'm sorry you feel that way, Luke," he said. "And I'm sorry I didn't realize that you felt that way. I guess I should have." "It's no big deal. I wouldn't have mentioned it now if I were coming back." He paused. "The fact that it didn't occur to you is probably the reason we get along." Pete stood up and stuck out his hand. He rose and grasped it. "Well, it's not like you're dying or anything," Pete said. "Washington's just down the street. We can stay in touch, can't we?"
Alan Thompson reading from his debut novel, A Hollow Cup, and he's going to be reading today at Julian's Clothing Store in Chapel Hill at 4:30, but here on The State of Things right now, your book, I think, the novel illustrates the high cost of desegregation. Certainly social justice had to be served, and it was long overdue. But in that moment, it was very difficult for everybody, including African Americans.
Especially African Americans and especially African American children. They were the ones who were being asked to actually carry out these policies that we're talking about. We had 5 years in Chapel Hill where, from 1961 to 1966, where the black parents could choose where to send their kids, send them to the black schools where they'd always gone or send them to the white schools. Interestingly, at the end of that 5 years, most of the black kids were still going to the black schools. That won't surprise anybody who has children. People want to go to school with their friends, the people they've known, and the life that they've led. And so in any event, in 1966, of course, they finally ended up building the new high school, and everybody got to go to the same building.
And that's all because the school officials at the time didn't do what perhaps they might have done, which would be to integrate both black and white schools, which, of course, gave lie to what their theory that those schools were equal. They certainly didn't want to send their white students to those schools. That would have been the easy fix. They didn't do it.
That's correct. I say in the acknowledgement, I mentioned that a number of the incidents in the book are derived from interviews that were part of the university's Southern Oral History Program. And much of the discussion in the book comes from interviews from those kids and the kids who were integrating the schools. And one of the questions a lot of them have as adults when they gave these interviews 10, 15 years ago was, why couldn't we use our school? And it was never even considered. In fact, when they finally closed down Lincoln High School, the school board voted to essentially use the building for a year for all of the sixth graders in town. Well, the white parents absolutely rejected that, and they backtracked on that quick.
This originally started out as a memoir for you. How did it turn into a novel?
Well, I came to town for my friend Alex Julian's 60th birthday, and the town seemed to me had changed. I sat down to write the book to try to preserve the way we had lived in Chapel Hill in the 50s and the 60s. But there were a lot of things going on in the 50s and the 60s that really, I don't think would have been appropriate for a memoir, and I wanted to say things in a slightly different way. A novel gives you a lot more leeway with respect to how you present things. And so I chose to go ahead and, you know, devise a plot that's in the middle of this book about Chapel Hill.
You, the characters in the book are lawyers. You're a lawyer.
Yes.
So it was going to be a memoir. So now this is a fair question for the novelist, and it often isn't. How much of this is biographical?
There are elements of me, but any author that tells you that he writes a book and dreams up his characters without ever giving any consideration to the people that he knows is fooling himself, and he's fooling you too. So there's some aspects of this that are me. The plot, really, and the main characters are fiction. With respect to the plot, it is it does have some factual basis. There was a young man who was actually murdered on campus in 1970 in the middle of a protest, the invasion of a group who were in fact called the Stormtroopers. We have Stormtroopers in this book. He was a young black man. He was in college. My murder victim is a young black woman who is just about to graduate from high school.
Did you have to do a lot of research for the book?
I did. As I said, I spent a lot of time with the university's interviews in the oral history project. I went back through about 6 or 7 years of the old – the newspaper in town then was called the Chapel Hill Weekly. It came out actually twice a week on Wednesdays and Sundays. It was very helpful for the discussion, the treatment of the desegregation of the schools, because there was something about it, either a news item or an editorial virtually every issue of the paper from – I didn't go all the way back to 1954. I could have. But certainly from, say, 1960, 1961, that was the primary topic in town.
As a young man going through this, all of this turmoil in the schools, you were a part of it. And I think, as you pointed out before, you know, kids don't often know what's going on. They don't take it the way everybody else does. As you go back and look over this whole period, did it surprise you? Did you have – I mean, how did you feel about your own experience looking back, knowing you have to write about it?
Well, you're right. Certainly, the white kids may have known what was going on a whole lot – in a whole lot greater sense than we did. And some of my friends or classmates may very well have been more – aware of things around them than I was. But I would say that the great majority of us were, you know, one day we have Stanley Vickers in school with us. Well, you know, that was fine. Nobody paid much attention to it. It was a very big deal for Stanley, of course, and a real big deal for the black people in town. And so when you go back and you read these things, and it makes you feel like you wish you'd paid a little more attention when you were a child. But, you know,
any big surprises for you?
Oh, I don't think so. I suppose there's some interesting things that are noted in the book with respect to the relationship between the university and the town and the protests that were going on at the time. Many of the people involved, of course, were associated with the university. That wouldn't surprise anybody. And, of course, the university had its own problems, which weren't really being discussed at the time.
They were overshadowed by bigger issues.
Yes.
No, now you've got the novel under your belt. You're going to go back to that memoir?
No, I'm writing another novel, unless people who read this one persuade me not to.
Alan, I don't think that's going to happen. It's a fine book. Alan Thompson, thank you so much for joining us.
I appreciate it. Thank you, Frank.
Alan Thompson's an attorney living in Georgetown, South Carolina. His debut novel is called A Hollow Cup. Going to sign books at Julian's Clothing Store in Chapel Hill today at 4:30. And for more information, you can go to julianstyle.com. Just ahead, the music of the Mallarmé Chamber Players on the State of Things Live. Stay tuned.